Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for March 2, 2007. This week, what prostate cancer and a lack of suns may have in common. Also, the answer to a listener's question about your brain. But first, if you collect antiques, you may know that furniture made of curly birch can command a steep price. Chelsea Wald's here to tell us why it's so rare and what scientists are doing to help foresters grow more of it.
Curly birch is a rare natural mutation of the silver birch tree and is valued for its wavy grain. It costs 10 times as much as its non-curly counterpart, which is used for pulp. Now scientists in Finland, where silver birch is grown, have found a way to accurately tell the difference between the two when they're young. That could help foresters decide which trees to cull and which to keep. Physicist Ari Salmi of the University of Helsinki says the technique uses high-frequency sound waves called ultrasound.
We launch ultrasonic waves into the wood and study the time of flight through the sample. And from this time of flight, we determine whether it's curly or not.
He says the sound waves go faster through the harder curly birch. Their preliminary results show the method is 93% accurate.
Thanks, Chelsea. In other tree news, hemlock trees, some reaching over 150 feet in height, grow in dense stands from Alabama to Canada. But since the 1950s, a tiny insect from Asia called the hemlock woody adelgid has been attacking the trees, decimating the forests. Now a University of Vermont team is fighting back with a fungus that kills the bugs. They're growing the fungus in whey, a cheap waste product from the cheese industry. Fungal spores within droplets of whey are sprayed on the trees. The fungal spores grow, attack the bugs, and it's hoped save the trees. Researchers studying a non-venomous Asian snake have found that it can eat toxic toads with no ill effects, save the toxin in special glands in its neck, and then use that toxin to defend itself. Deprived of the toxic toads, the snakes soon become harmless. Next, prostate cancer is one of the most common cancers among American men. Now, scientists are gaining insight into a possible cause. Justin Warner has more.
Scientists suspect that a possible cause of prostate cancer may be a damaged Y chromosome, the same chromosome that makes a person male rather than female. Now, a study led by Susan Harlap of Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health has found new support for that theory. Among 39,000 Israeli fathers, they found that prostate cancer was 40% more common among men with no sons than among men with at least one son. Furthermore, the more sons a man had, the less likely he was to have prostate cancer. Harlap says this fits the Y chromosome hypothesis.
On theoretical grounds, if a man has a damaged Y chromosome, he may be much less likely to have boys.
That's because his Y chromosome sperm may be too weak to conceive a viable embryo, leaving only his X chromosome sperm, which would produce daughters. So having a large family with no sons might be an indicator of underlying Y chromosome damage. Harlap says that laboratory studies have also connected prostate cancer to the Y chromosome, at least circumstantially.
Some scientists who study the cells from the actual prostate tumors have noticed that the Y chromosome is sometimes missing from these cells. Somehow it's gotten lost. It's not clear whether that's the cause or related to the cause of the cancer, but it certainly suggests that the Y chromosome is interesting and we should be looking at it and thinking about it.
In the meantime, she says that men with only daughters shouldn't be alarmed since the sex ratio of one's children is usually just luck of the draw.
Thanks, Justin. Michael of Traverse City, Michigan, asks why each half of the brain controls the opposite side of the body. Well, Michael, it is true that nerve fibers from the right side of the brain cross over to the left side of the body and vice versa, but according to neuroscientist Michael Gazzaniga of the University of California, Santa Barbara, that doesn't mean one brain side totally controls the opposite side of the body.
Everything seems more distributed, and the actual ways information come together to affect a motor response seem to involve both sides of the brain in many kinds of tasks.
As to why nerves from the brain cross to the other side of the body, that's still a mystery. If you have a brainy science question, call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT or submit it at scienceupdate.com. If we use it on the air, you'll win a cool and collectible Science Update mug. Finally, Chelsea tells us how a beetle is inspiring engineers who are trying to make ultra-white materials.
One of nature's whitest creatures is a small Southeast Asian beetle. optical physicist Pete Vukusic of the University of Exeter in England is learning how the beetle's thatched scales create such a pure white effect. He notes that each scale is only 1/200th of a millimeter thick, or about 50 to 100 times thinner than paper.
Generally speaking, such brilliant whiteness can only be produced from a thick layer, such as a few feet of snow or a few millimeters of enamel on teeth.
In a new report, he describes how the scales scatter light so well. They learned a lot by comparing the internal structure of the white beetle scales to those of a similar, brightly colored beetle.
The three-dimensionally white system is entirely disordered. There's a random array of fibers and filaments. Whereas in the colored system, that three-dimensional array is ordered, is very regular and periodic. So that's one of the things.
He also says that despite their randomness, the internal fibers are optimally spaced to scatter white light. If that could be recreated commercially, it could be useful in a number of applications. Examples range from paint and dental implants to new ultra-efficient flat light panels, which will need very thin reflective backings to scatter their light across a room.
Thanks, Chelsea. Well, that's all for this week. Next time, we'll answer a listener's question about how amoebas move. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.